You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Once a month, we sit down with someone from the Juno Police Department to find out what's on their public safety radar. The end of a busy summer, which seems like a good time for a visit with Deputy Police Chief Dave Campbell. Welcome back to the show, Deputy Chief Campbell.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. Let's dive right in with something that's been in the news a lot over the last week, the disappearance of a hiker, Joe Clayton Sweeney. He's been missing almost 2 weeks now, and I just wanted to ask you, and you wanted to share a little bit about how your department responds to cases like these.
Sure. We've put out a few press releases on it, asking for the public's help, doing things on that line, and it seems like this would be a good opportunity to kind of talk in general terms about, different jurisdictional responsibilities. And so if it's a missing person, it is the responsibility of the Juno Police Department as far as looking to try to track people down, go to different places, look at, go to airports, do things like that, respond to sightings. But if it's a search and rescue that's out in the woods, that's the purview of the Alaska State Troopers. And it's set up that way, basically in the state of Alaska through statute and through the Alaska Constitution, because search and rescues tend to be really large affairs. They tend to have a lot of different people from, Civil Air Patrol and searchers and sea dogs and helicopters. And oftentimes those types of capacities go beyond what municipal governments can have. So the state of Alaska in its wisdom has kept search and rescues as the purview of the state. And I think that's really wise that they did that. So in this case, it started off as a search and rescue, is that he was in the woods. So it starts off when we get cases like this, and there's been a few in the past 2 years that kind of fall under this category, where it starts with the troopers, and they take care of the search and rescue and the coordination of that. But at some point in time, if the search and rescue doesn't locate the person, it turns in from a search and rescue to a missing persons. And so there's kind of like a handoff where it goes from the troopers to JPD, and we end up becoming the lead agency in the follow-up from that point in time. And that's what happened in this case. There are packets we have to put together into ABSIN, and so the national system is notified of them. And one of our lieutenants, Lieutenant Craig Campbell, who has no relation to me, but we share the same last name, he has been coordinating with the family, and we've been following up on sightings and potential sightings and things like that. I thought that it was something that was important for the people to know, that there's kind of a transfer there. And one of the questions also came up was, well, how does Silver Works alert? And Silver Alerts are also the purview of the troopers. They're the ones that have the authority to enact the emergency broadcast system, for lack of a better term. So the troopers are the ones that do the Amber Alerts and the Silver Alerts. So I just thought that this was a good opportunity to let people know, because it seemed like there's a lot of comments, well, call JBD. Maybe JBD is doing this. Maybe JBD is doing that. And it's a little bit bigger than that, and that it has to be coordinated between us and the troopers. One thing that we do, another service that we offer, we just started up this year, is we have what we call the ARC program, which I'm not sure if a lot of people are aware of it. Now, Silver Alerts are designed for vulnerable adults. Lots of times when people hear the term silver adults, they think of the elderly, mm-hmm. but you don't have to be elderly to qualify for a silver alert. You just have to be a vulnerable adult. And we have a program called the ARC program, which stands for at-risk citizens, where if somebody has a loved one that it could potentially be an at-risk citizens due to, mental capacity or something of that line, they can go onto the JBD website and voluntarily sign up and provide us a photograph, so that if something happens, we're kind of like one step ahead of the game, to where we already know who the person is, what they look like. We have information that might help us communicate with them better. We had a lot of people sign up for it when it was first announced, and it's kind of trailed off since then. But giving up-to-date information immediately in the field when someone is in crisis like that is just super, super important. So I'd like to encourage people that are listening that if you have someone in your family that would be considered a vulnerable adult or even a juvenile that might have some issues that you want us to know about. It's purely voluntary. Mm-hmm. You can go on to juvenilepolice.com and search down and see the ARC program and sign up for it. It's a great program.
I agree. I think it's an excellent service that's offered by you and a good resource for you as well. So I hope that everybody who wants to sign up for that can do so. Now, in this case, the family's made its own efforts to locate Mr. Sweeney. So do you encourage the public to work with your department or the state troopers when organizing search parties or posting statements online?
We don't really do searches in the woods. It's just something that we don't have the capacity to do from a manpower point of view or the expert point of view. So we don't coordinate those. We respond if someone is like, if there's a sighting of a hitchhiker or, someone that shows up at the mall or, something like that, that's what we can do. So anything further as far as this goes would either have to be through like the troopers or through the family. I know the Sea Dogs did a lot of work on this case originally, but I believe the Sea Dogs need to have the troopers or an agency reach out to them in order for them to get involved. I don't think they do it through a citizen request.
There's a $5,000 reward in this case. What would you advise if someone wants to go out and look for him themselves?
Be very careful. Juneau is a very unforgiving place, especially out in the woods. And, we do have several people that in the past few years that have been hikers that have gone missing. And it's very dense undergrowth. And if a person gets hurt, it's very, very difficult to find them. What we train our police officers on is, if you're responding to a call, you don't do anybody any good if you don't get to the call by getting in a wreck or something. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to go out and search, that's a very admirable thing to do. But, don't exacerbate the problem by yourself becoming lost or in need or of aid or something along that line. So I would just say be very careful when you do that, because it is a very treacherous woods. You don't think it is, but it is. We've had a lot of instances in the past where something happens, and we had a hiker that went missing, I think, 15 years ago. I'm not going to use any names because I don't want to stir up any problems with the family. But we had a pretty small area to search, and a lot of effort went into it to search. And about 10 years after the fact, about 5 years ago, we actually found that hiker, and it was right in the middle of where just a ton of searches went into it. And it was because the vegetation is just so, so thick that it's a little bit more difficult to find somebody in our woods than it is just in regular woods. It's very thick.
Right, right. Well, thank you so much for answering my questions about that, Deputy Chief Campbell. I really appreciate that, and best of luck to the searchers. Changing topics now, I think the last time you and I talked on the show, or one of the last times, you gave us an update on the progress that the Juneau Police Department has made in their work toward accreditation. What is the latest on that? Is there any news to share?
Yeah, there is. I'd like to give just a little bit of history for people that might not have heard our previous conversation. So police accreditation is a pretty big deal for us. It's something that we've been working for a long time. And one question that I get quite often is, well, why go through all the troubles to get accredited? And my response is, you wouldn't want to go to a university and not have your degree be accredited. You wouldn't want your university to be unaccredited, right? You wouldn't want your doctor to be unaccredited. You wouldn't want your attorney to have a degree from an unaccredited school. What accreditation does, it's an outside body that looks at your procedures, your policies, and basically provides an in-depth review into what you do to make sure that you meet best practices. And I think that, for police departments, we owe it to the people of Juneau to have that review done and to be able to say, yeah, we do follow best practices. We do have our policies and procedures in place, and we follow them because that's important. And it really became important, last summer 2020, when the social justice issues were going on in our nation, and there were people that were questioning the police, and in a situation like that, and I think it's wise for people to question their government. When people question the police, is it better to say, oh yeah, we follow best practices, trust me, or to say we follow best practices and this other organization that is recognized as being able to do that has said that you follow best practices. You know, so it's, it provides assurances to the public that we're not just saying something, we're actually been reviewed and do it. So the organization that we go through is the Oregon Accreditation Alliance. They are a recognized accrediting body. In order to qualify for new federal grants that are coming out, there are certain things that you have to be able to attest to, and you have to have an accrediting body that can basically sign you off for the federal government, and the OAA is one of those. The reason why we're going through Oregon is because Alaska does not have an accrediting body. We used to, but we don't anymore. In the early 2000s, mid-2000s, the state of Alaska put together an accrediting body. We have a group called ACOP, Alaska Chiefs of Police, and ACOP put together an accrediting body called ALIAC. Don't ask me what it stands for. It's something like Alaska Law Enforcement Accrediting, yada, yada, yada. It was a mouthful. But in 2009, we went through the process, and we became, at that point, the only accredited police agency in the state of Alaska through ALIAC. After the five-year accreditation was done through them, we were going through the accreditation process. It was in 2014. No other agency in Alaska was going through the accreditation process. So ACOP decided that it was too much work for one agency, and they didn't have the interest from other agencies, so they canceled the ALIAC program. So we were no longer accredited because the accrediting body didn't exist anymore, but we felt that it was still important for the reasons I mentioned before. So ACOP did a bunch of research, and they decided that the OAA, the Oregon Accreditation Alliance, had very, very similar standards to what ALIAC had. So they ended up coming into an agreement with the OAA to accreditate Alaska agencies. And so we started looking at it, and we decided it was something that we wanted to do. We've been working at it for a couple of years now. It's kind of a slow process, but it really came into focus last year when the issues happened with the questioning of the police nationally. So we decided that we needed to kind of pick up our work a little bit. I had two officers that did a tremendous amount of work for it. We had Sergeant Nick Garza and Sergeant Chris Gifford did a lot of work as far as, you know, making sure that the policies were uploaded properly and the proofs and whatnot. So in June of this year, we had our site visit. We signed off and said that we were done with everything. We had our site visit. So the assessor came to Juneau, spent some time with us, with the officers, asking us questions, looking at stuff. They were in the comm center for a while. Wrote up a report recommending that we should be accredited. And next week, on Tuesday, is the next meeting for the OAA board down in Oregon. And one of their topics is to review and vote whether JPD gets accredited or not. So I'm just thrilled that years and years of work is coming together. And I'm going to watch the meeting on Tuesday. And I'm really hoping that at the end of Tuesday, we'll be able to send out a press release basically saying it's official, we're accredited, and it's just a culmination of a lot of work. So we're just very, very happy with where we're at right now.
I hope so too. And I think anyone who's ever been a part of any accreditation process understands just how difficult it is and how much work it is. And it is quite an accomplishment for you and your department. And I think the citizens of Juneau appreciate the effort. So well done there. I'm hoping for good news for you. On that.
Yeah, I hope I'm not being premature in letting the cat out of the bag. But there are two other agencies in Alaska who are now accredited through OAA, so we'll be the third, which is nice because more agencies are now recognizing the need for accreditation, stepping up and doing the same thing. But it's a huge feather in the cap of the agency and the city, because it really speaks to your police department, you know, and we all live here. At some point in time, I'm going to be, you know, retired, and I'm not going to be a part of the JPD anymore. And I'm still going to live here, and I want my agency to meet standards and still be the agency that it is while I'm here.
Well, we've got our fingers crossed for you over here. And next time we talk, hopefully we'll have some, hopefully I'll be talking with someone from an accredited police department. So. Well, last but not least, Deputy Chief Campbell, I just wanted to say I'm kind of glad we're on the radio today instead of on TV, because you're looking a little scruffy. I was wondering if you forgot to shave this morning or what's going on with that.
Yeah, I'm sporting probably about 4 or 5 days of growth, which is not usual for me. Well, thanks for noticing and, you know, calling me on the radio for being out of policy. But no, actually. JPD is participating in a national effort of first responders to raise money for pediatric cancer. And we did it last year, we're doing it this year. And there's a group called The Cure Starts Now, and they have reached out to law enforcement agencies across the country to allow their staff to grow beards and engage in dyeing their hair or fingernails purple. So it's called Color Up or Beard Up or Color Up for the Cure. So the reason why we started, it's a little longer this year, is September is Child Cancer Awareness Month. And so we've told our officers that they, if they want to participate, they have to donate first. So we've been in, going through the organization, The Cure Starts Now, to collect donations from the officers, and the officers are able to grow a beard. But then come, I think, first of the year, we got to shave it off again. So you will be seeing officers, our male officers, potentially with beards, and our female officers, potentially with some purple fingernails or hair color. And it's part of an awareness program to raise money for pediatric cancer. So we're really happy to be able to participate with that.
Cool. I look forward to seeing some officers with purple hair. That'd be pretty neat.
Yeah, to me, it's weird. I mean, whenever I see a police officer with a beard, it just doesn't look right. You know, maybe my 26 and a half years, I'm just an old dog. It just looks odd. But then again, I'm growing a beard too. So it can't be that odd.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. Now, I like to keep up with JPD on your Facebook page. Are there other ways to stay up to date on Juneau Police Department activities?
That's probably the biggest way to do it. We do, we are.
Here
in a few months, it's actually full, but we will be doing it again in the springtime as well. But the Facebook is definitely the easiest and the best way to keep up with us with what's going on.
Deputy Chief Campbell, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much.
I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On average, Juneau sees between 125 to 150 young people every year who experience homelessness. This summer, a new shelter opened as part of a partnership between the City and Borough of Juneau and the Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority. Here to talk about it is Jordan Nigro, the Youth Services Manager for the City and Borough of Juneau. Welcome to Juneau Afternoon, Jordan.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. It's been a while since you and I chatted on this show. Can you just please give us an update on the status of youth services here in Juneau and maybe how they've been impacted by the last year and a half of pandemic restrictions?
Yeah, so it's been quite a year for all of us, or almost 2 years now, I guess. We're just chugging along. So the Youth Services Division of Parks and Rec has actually grown a fair amount. We have, as we'll talk about, we have opened a shelter in partnership with the Housing Authority, which is really exciting. Shea Hat Hit is the name of the shelter, which means Spruce Root House. And Hune Lance Twitchell gave us that name, which was so generous of him. We have the shelter, and then we've been open at the youth center, at the drop-in center, through all of COVID, pretty much. We were closed in the beginning for, I think, about 6 weeks. And then we've been open since and serving youth. And we have our outreach and navigator positions. We brought on an additional navigator position, which is also for a project through Tlingit-Haida Region, in partnership with Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority, to support young transition age youth 18 to 24 in Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority's Rapid Rehousing Program. So they have a grant for rapid rehousing, and we have a grant to support the youth that are going into those houses. So that we help them find apartments, support them in the apartments. And then we also, have our BAM program starting back up. We did run BAM all through COVID, but in last school year when the schools were closed, we still did some BAM activities, which is our middle school after school program. We did all of that outside, and it was really fun. We did outdoor cooking. We partnered with some community folks to do a middle school cross-country program, which was really fun. We've never done that before. So it kind of force us to stretch and flex a bit in ways that we didn't really, you know, expect. Our Youth Employment and Parks program, which is partnership with SAIL, with that program during COVID, we were able to double the amount of youth the first summer. This past summer, we went back to our regular, we had about 10 youth participate in the program this last summer. So, and then we did summer camps again this past summer. Last summer, we didn't run summer camps. But yeah, we've been very, very busy doing lots of stuff. Youth sports is, outdoor soccer is happening. We are unfortunately going to cancel. The EOC really recommended that we cancel our indoor soccer season because of COVID. So that's one thing that we aren't going to be doing. But otherwise, things are, we have a lot going on.
Yeah, well, it's nice that so many activities you were already had up and running were pretty COVID safe, COVID friendly, mm-hmm. outdoor things, mm-hmm. physically distanced things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I want to talk some more about the Spruce Root House, Shayi Hathit. And you and I usually chat on this show about Zach Gordon Youth Center. I mean, in normal times, that's what we always talked about. And the focus there was just mm-hmm. keeping kiddos busy after school or during the summer. And now this new shelter focuses on young people experiencing homelessness. I just wondered if you could tell me what's the need for that in our community.
Well, you kind of spoke to it in the intro. You know, we here, Juno hasn't had a youth shelter for a couple years. And at Zach Gordon, we have a fair amount of teens who come in who struggle with housing. What that usually looks like in Juno is couch surfing, which is, you know, staying one night here, one night there. Sometimes kids end up in pretty unsafe situations, just because it's a place that they can have as a place to stay. And so, you know, we worked with quite a few community members through the Juno Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, and just all kind of, we're trying to figure out like, what can we do and how can this work? And a lot of providers really were like, well, we think that Zach Gordon would be a good place, good partner to do it. And so that's what happened. So we have funding from we have a federal grant, we have some local grants, the Juno Community Foundation is funding $150,000 towards the project, and we also have some funding through the Mental Health Trust. And so we've really, you know, worked hard to reach out, and the city has put some funds towards this project, of course, also. So yeah, we really see a need for it. The building that we're using is at 9290 Herlock, and it has been a shelter in the past, and actually going way back, it was the Juno receiving home. So it's served lots of roles. It's always served youth in need in this community. And so the partnership with the Housing Authority, they did a bunch of work on the building to get it ready for us, and they are really managing the property and we are managing the program. So that's kind of how that breaks down. And so right now there's a 4-bedroom apartment in the building, and then the shelter is 6 beds. So the apartment we will use for 18 to 20 year old youth that can live there for longer periods of time, you know, 3 to 6 months, and then we'll hope to get them out into the community, into their own apartments. And then the shelter is for youth 10 through 17, so up to 18. And that those beds are more temporary, so up to 21 days. And you know, we hope to like help them resolve the crisis that led to their placement, get them connected to services that they might need, support their family. A lot of times it's you know, family therapy, or maybe getting them connected with some behavioral health resources is what's needed. We have 2 youth advocates on staff who act as case managers for emergency crisis case managing. And then we have several staff on that are, you know, just providing skills development and helping kids to, you know, get out the door in the morning to school and debrief their day when they come back home, and they do, you know, exercises in the morning. And yeah, it's pretty, like, we've worked really hard to make the space as home-like as possible. So when kids come in, you know, they can, and the Housing Authority just did a wonderful job getting, like, there's beautiful art in the facility, and the Monday Night Quilters group donated quilts to us, so all the beds have handmade quilts, and, you know, so it's just, it's, we've really worked hard to create a space that if you are in a situation that feels, you know, stressful and traumatic, and that when you come in, it will feel soothing and comfortable and safe. And so, yeah, that's kind of a bit about the shelter. I feel like I just talked a whole mouthful.
Well, maybe you can tell me how someone would access the resources. Is there an application process, minimum qualifications needed?
Yeah, so the shelter is an emergency shelter. So I mentioned that the address is at 9290 Hurlock. So for youth, if, you know, you are a teen and you need emergency shelter, if you don't have a place to stay, you can just come there. We love it if you know that you want to come, and you could and you can call us ahead of time, and we can set up an intake. And but if you are just in an emergency and you need a place to stay, you can just come. And the phone number to the shelter is 364-7481. So you can call. We've tried really hard to keep our intake process short. There are, of course, forms that you have to do when you come, because this is the nature of the work that we do. But we've really worked to pare down the intake process to be as unobtrusive as we can. And so, you know, if a youth comes in who is in that age group, age category between 10 and 17 or 10 and 18, we will settle them in. We'll do a little paperwork with them. We'll find out, we do call family members, whoever the guardian is, and we'll have the guardian come in and do paperwork. One thing that we do not have funding for is to serve youth who are in custody of the state. So if a youth comes in who is in custody, we would, you know, call the social worker or the probation officer and figure out, like, what could the next plan be? Where could this youth go from here? We're really set up for youth who are in their parents' custody, or their, or they've, you know, kind of lost track of their guardian altogether, which sometimes might happen, but, chances are there's, you know, we're all, kids are still in their parents' custody till they turn 18, unless something has otherwise changed that. So yeah, there's not, you don't have to apply. It's emergency shelter. And so you do for the apartment, if you're listening to this and you're 18 to 20 and you're like, I want to know about that apartment, come into Zach and talk to us about it. And we can, that is different. And that does have more of an application process. But the emergency shelter is just that, it's emergency, and our goal would be, you know, to get youth connected with resources. If they're going to school, keep their life as normal as possible. We'd still send you to school and figure out a plan from there.
The shelter has a lovely name, Shei Hit, the Spruce Root House. As you mentioned, it was given by Hune Lance Twitchell. What is the story there? What was the inspiration?
Yeah, so we, Lance was, and Jackie Peta, who is the Lincoln-Hyder Regional Housing Authority CEO, she and I and Lance and a few other folks all got together with the Youth Action Board, and we just, which is a group of youth who have been very involved in getting the shelter going, and really were, you know, when we started talking about this potential of rapid rehousing and different needs for youth who are homeless or at risk of homelessness in Juneau, a big thing that the two things that we heard from youth are, we need transition aged housing for youth 18 to 24-ish, and we need emergency shelter. And so so those were the things that as a community we worked towards. And Lance brought forward this concept of Shei Hat Hit Spruce Root House name as this, you know, spruce trees. We talk a lot about the way spruce trees hold each other up, and their root systems are shallow, and they're shallow because they're all connected to each other. And so, you know, some trees, their root systems go really deep and they don't need to be connected to their neighbor. That will hold them up. But with spruce trees, their root system, they hold each other up. And that's really, we really want, we want the shelter, we want to think of the work we're doing in that way. And we want our youth in our community to know that we will hold them up and that they can hold each other up and that we are all together as a community supporting them. And so, so we just, Lance presented this idea to the youth and they just loved it. And if you want to practice saying this name or learn more about it, I would definitely suggest you go on to our website, which is cbjkids.org. And there's a beautiful video that Hunay made for us. And it really speaks about the name and why this name is so perfect for this program. And we are really honored that he worked with us on this, and the kids love it, and we all love it, and
I think it's lovely.
yeah, and just like as it's so like we really wanted something rooted in place, and this is, and it's just so great. Yeah,
couldn't be more appropriate. Spruce root.
Yeah.
Well, this is a great accomplishment for our community. So thanks to you and everyone for all the work they've done on the project. I think it's, you know, much needed and much appreciated. But I wanted ask, what with the time that we have left here, what else are you working on for youth services right now?
Yeah, so the other thing I wanted to mention is we are starting BAM back up for the school year. You know, BAM is our middle school after school program. It's both at Zontakihini and Floyd Dryden, and the programming is free and fun, and we do it with a lot of partners. Last year, we didn't have a bunch of volunteers coming into the school. We ran most of the programs ourselves. We had a few volunteer things. But this year, we're going back to having volunteers. And so if you are interested in supporting our BAM program in any way, and you're listening to this, you can give us a call. Amanda Babin is the new BAM program coordinator, and Amanda is wonderful. And her phone number is 796-5811. Or you can call here at Zach or send us a message on Facebook. You know, we're always looking for people who like to do things with middle school age kids. And if you're not sure what that is, if you can cook, they love to cook. So cooking, we have stoves to do outdoor cooking if you're interested in that. You know, we're really cautious around COVID protocols and all of that. Everybody wears masks and we do lots of hand sanitizing and it's really fun. And we're looking for volunteers. So if you're interested, let us know.
Oh, thanks so much, Jordan. Well, it's been really great talking with you today. I really appreciate all the information that you shared, and thanks again for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Shelley.
Take care, and we will talk again soon, I'm sure.
You too. Bye-bye.
Up next, the Juneau Arts and Culture Center is in the process of reopening. How you can help. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. They say a community is as vital as its expression of the arts. And if the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council has anything to do with it, there will always be plenty of opportunity to share and enjoy arts and culture in this community. And here to talk about some of those opportunities, the council's executive director, Nancy DeCherney. Hi, Nancy.
Shelley, how are you?
Well, thanks. And how are you?
It's a beautiful day.
Yes, and there's lots to talk about. So let's start with First Friday. What are some of the events that folks can check out?
We have a couple of, well, we're doing our thing virtually because our galleries are not quite together, except the one over at Centennial Hall, the Davis Gallery, has actual, the Portrait of the Tongass pieces are hanging there, and you can go to the Davis Gallery and see them. They are beautiful. It's a combination of paintings, drawings, and photographs made by Emily Charlotte Tableson and Alex Witt. And I really want to say it's worth checking out over there. To get into it, you probably have to ring the doorbell. You go to the gravel parking lot, go to the door that's marked business, and ring the doorbell. And we are doing ours virtually, and it's kind of exciting. It's the Alaska Breastfeeds statewide Juried art exhibit. And it's got some really unique and unusual things in it. Some of her It's a wonderful organization. They started in 2014. It was the brainchild of the Fairbanks Breastfeeding Coalition. And they have now, the show goes around all over the state. And as a matter of fact, they're looking for a place that would like to host it in 2022. But anyway, the Juno Breastfeeding Alliance via the Juno Arts and Humanities Council is virtually showing this year's. So you go to our website and click on First Friday, and there you go. Nice. Devil's Club Brewing Company has Christine Kleinhens of Tidewatcher showing her Wild Lupin connection that is going to be up through the month. They're on North Franklin Street, and I think you can stop in there on the First Friday. There's some really large stuff, some really beautiful stuff. I love her colors. She just does wonderful color things. Annie Kales has Jacqueline Tingey. She does paintings and multimedia pieces, one-of-a-kind prints, hand-painted leather jewelry. Currently, she's mostly doing watercolors. But anyway, that show will also be up for the month. But the First Friday part is from 4:30 to 7:30. So stop down at Annie Kales. I know they're real careful about their COVID practices, so you can stop in there. Juno Artist Gallery, which is in the Senate building, has Lou Isaac. He's a painter. She's the featured artist for the month of September. So stop in there. She'll be available to talk from 4:30 to 6. And there's also, she has an email you can get a hold of her at. So everybody needs to be masked up for these events. And I think that's pretty much what I know about First Friday at this point.
All right. Well, that's a really good rundown. So next thing I wanted to ask you about is the Fresh Air Market. I know we had the food fair over the weekend, and that seemed like a success despite the rain. So I saw a lot of people there. And now there's one last Fresh Air Market on the calendar. When does that take place?
It was going to be this Saturday, but we decided it was so close to the one that we just had that we'll do it on the 18th, Saturday the 18th from 10 until 1. It's predicted to rain too, but that seems to be the magic weather for these outdoor markets. We had a huge crowd. I haven't had time to count it, but we had probably between 500 and 700 people that showed up. So as Ed Bayarsky said, there was no fire danger. We could be we didn't need to worry about that. But and you can go onto our website, and there's a button for the Fresh Air Markets, and the people who have registered, you can see what they're going to be selling there. And if you're interested, you can also click on that button and sign up to be a vendor. We will be outside again, come rain or shine, and we have tents, and we're Southeastern Alaskan people, so we can take it, right?
That's great. We can take it, yep, for a few minutes at least.
Yeah.
Well, another piece of exciting news is that the JAC, the Juno Arts and Culture Center, is reopening, so that must be some welcome news for you and your crew. After a year or more being out of service for the arts, what kind of work does it need, Nancy?
Well, we're really doing all sorts of stuff, and we have a wonderful posse of volunteers. I want to thank them all so much. I just send out a thing saying this tomorrow, we need this, and people show up to do it. It's just great. We've had the HERS painting has completely repainted the main hall. And the lobby shop area, and now we're working on the gallery. All of the offices have been repainted. You'll notice the doors are bright red going outside. So we're working on that. Today we were working on very carefully putting all the glass back into the cabinetry that goes in the lobby shop, so we'll be able to get the lobby shop up. We're getting Reggie's working on carpeting the gallery and the offices. I mean, we're doing a major overhaul around here. So, which, you know, we did all this the last time in 2007. So this was just a really good opportunity for us to clean things and sort things and get rid of things and try to start fresh. I think everybody's going to really like it. And if you're interested in helping out, give me a call. There's always a dump run to do. There's always something like that we need help. A little bit of help doing so. And we were hoping to be able to do an opening on Friday, but obviously we couldn't manage that. But We're going to have some moving that people, if anybody feels strong and wants to help us move a bunch of desks, we're going to need that pretty soon. So it's fun. It's exciting. You should wander over, Shelley. You're just across the
You're right. And I should. And I will. We just have a few minutes left. I'd hope we'd have a little bit more time to talk about it, but I'm sure we'll talk again. So last but not least, the Jack is helping to coordinate the first Indigenous Music Festival here in Juneau. And I'm really excited to talk about that. What can you tell us for a little bit of background and overview there?
Well, it's called Rock Ock. It's going to be an every other year sort of thing. The first one is going to be in November. We have signed Snotty Nose Rez Kids. They're coming from Canada. They're going to be virtual. This year, we knew that things were going to have to probably be virtual, which allows us to bring people from all over the world without having to get visas and stuff like that. So this is good. We have Purifé, Pantayo. Those folks are going to be also virtual. But live, we have Albino Mbai, Arias Hoyle, Byron Nicolai, the Ed Littlefield Trio, Mark Brown, Bamua, Superman, Whitney Youngman, and Yatsin. So it's quite a Yeah, it's great. Taylor Vidic has stepped in to help us coordinate it. You know, she did the From Juneau From Love, or From Juneau With Love, did a great job with that. So she's helping us get it all organized. It's going to be very exciting. We have I believe that Stephen Blanchett made a playlist on one of the things which I will post so that you can start getting listening to the musicians. It's very exciting what we're bringing in, and I'm hoping that everybody will get excited. I think mostly it's going to be, the things will be live, will be at the Jack. It's one of those things, you just can't plan anything anymore these days. So we have a plan and we may have to change it, but it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be upbeat and really exciting. Our goal is for this to be the festival that everybody, Indigenous performers from all over the world, want to perform at to sort of launch into the public eye. So we got big plans, big aspirations.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that rundown. And I do look forward to talking about that more. KTOO is the main media partner for this event. You can also find out more by tuning into KXLL and listen to Chandra Boom, our arts, culture, music producer for the station. She's on the planning committee for Ock Rock and will be providing regular updates and music from the artists on the lineup. Her shows are Wednesdays and Fridays, 1 p.m. on 100.7 FM online at KXLL. Nancy DeCherney, thanks so much for talking with me today. I hope you have a lovely rest of your afternoon.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.